Welcome back to Highly Successful Couples, the podcast that helps couples grow together instead of growing apart. I'm your host, Nick Solacek, and today we are going to take a deep dive into a conversation around communication styles. Maximizing and minimizing. These are two terms that come from the imago therapy world. We also know it as the avoidant anxious dance, the island in the wave, this opposites attract dynamic, maybe cliches that exist in society like the avoidant man or the anxious woman. It's really what's going on inside of these patterns. So what I want to try to do is talk about how these things get started at a high level in our childhood and what we can do about it as adults. How can we recognize where this energy, this kind of expression is coming from? And what can we do about it? How can we behave differently? How can we create the meaningful changes that we seek? So to get started, there's a concept that I like to call the developmental mountain. And where that starts for all of us is we come into this world as an infant. We're born hopefully into a family system who can take care of us and who can guide us forward on the path. And in this example, and in this metaphor that I'm going to use, I want to try to convey that we've got this journey to go on. We've got this pathway to become an adult who can create and generate, take responsibility for ourselves, and can contribute to society in a meaningful way. So we all start out on this path. I like to call it the yellow brick road of childhood development. Hopefully we've got two caretakers there who can guide us forward, who can provide boundaries, reassurance, answer our questions, create a secure and safe environment for us so that we can grow and develop into a responsible, mature human being. Now, along this path, along this yellow brick road, there are lions and tigers and bears. And for some of us, these are our parents. These are our caretakers. Sometimes it's the people in our family system that are actually scary and threatening, and we constantly feel like we have to protect ourselves from them. Most of us experience some threat, some mild fear or strong fear, sometimes real dangers in our life, and we want to protect ourselves from those. So as we grow up, if we learn that we can't rely on our caretakers to guide us forward, protect us, if we learn that they don't really support our authenticity, if they're unable to validate our feelings or answer our questions. If they're not comfortable with us making decisions, for example, if we're a 16-year-old child, if our parents are uncomfortable with us making decisions about who we're friends with at school or what outfit we want to wear to school, sometimes if it's too controlling, too strict, it's too intense, we start to feel like it's not okay to be us. It's not okay to make our own choices. And we're going to adapt. We're going to start taking little side paths. So instead of walking this yellow brick road of development with our parents where it's safe and secure, we say, I think I'm going to wander over this way into the woods. I'm going to take this other edge of the mountain to protect certain outcomes that I want. And that might mean I withhold my choices from you. It might mean that I start keeping secrets. It might mean that I learn to do things for myself all the time because I can't rely on the people around me. Maybe it means that I have to get really loud. I have to cry or whine to get attention or to get my parents to meet my needs in some way. There's all kinds of ways that we can do this. We can get rigid. We can get stubborn, opinionated. We can become manipulative. We can get really quiet. We can become a people pleaser and just conform. So there's different patterns that exist. But ultimately, whatever's happening on this yellow brick road, on the climate, the environment, the weather of this road is going to dictate whether we adapt or whether we feel like this path is safe or we need to take another direction. Ultimately, what I'm talking about here, this pathway is really from 0 to 20. And beyond that, we still have a lot of life to live, a lot to learn, a lot to do, and things that we want to accomplish. So The caretakers have a certain set of responsibilities early on. The challenge is that most parents are not able to perfectly meet our needs. I would argue that no parents are, because no people are perfect. And we talked about that in an earlier episode titled The Perfect Partner. So ultimately what happens is we've got this pathway forward. We can think of it as traveling up a ridge of a mountain. And on either side, there are alternate pathways. We can wander into the woods off the main path. And there's typically two routes that people take. One is that they take this minimizing route, and the other is they take a maximizing route. And both these people move those directions because of specific fears and concerns that they've got. They do what they have to do to protect themselves from threat and harm as kids. They'll do what they have to do to obviously survive, but it goes beyond just physical survival, staying alive. There's other things that we want to protect, like our ability to explore or to win, to do well, to have friends or have relationships with people outside of the family, right? Eventually, there's a stage where we want to have maybe a romantic connection with someone. We have a crush on someone. And at each stage of our development, there's key messages that we hope that we get. I would hope that all children get, but obviously our parents have their own shortcomings. They're preoccupied with their own stuff and are often unable to show up for us in these ways. So these two pathways, these are two communication styles that develop. There's a way of being, but ultimately it's the way you kind of express yourself in adulthood, because it's just been patterned over decades. It's what you learned how to do to stay safe. So what we learned how to do to stay safe in our primary relationship, the family, our first initial relationship, we just repeat those patterns later in our adult life. At a high level, the minimizer is someone who avoids drawing attention towards issues. So they might not talk about things. They might keep things inside in their own head, be more logical, be more independent. And the maximizer, they have a tendency to draw attention towards issues. They are the one who wants to talk about things. They might source information or ideas externally from themselves, talk to other people about what should I do, talk to their partner, what do you think, what should I wear, what should we do, what should we eat, what do you think about this thing that I created? And they have these opposite kinds of expression. Pretty much every couple that I've met has this opposites attract thing going on. The minimizer is with the maximizer, and we're going to talk a little bit more about that in today's show. So just to make sure that you're with me, as children, we defend ourselves against the experience of pain, stress, and hurt, either by maximizing or minimizing. The maximizer, they have this kind of expression that's more the crying, the whining, clinging, chasing, pursuing, anxious energy, drawing attention towards themselves or towards the issues. And the minimizer has this pattern of shutting down, getting small, going inward. Maybe they detach or they get really rigid and opinionated about things. And they avoid drawing attention towards themselves, avoid drawing attention towards issues that could be a concern. And both people have certain fears and motivations that drive this. But what I want you to see now is just this pattern, right? The constriction of energy and the expansion of energy. Ultimately, when we're children, we either have a parent that is over-involved or under-involved. And both situations amount to the same thing, which is pain. So we have a painful lack of contact or painful contact, right? Painful contact might mean someone who's controlling, smothering, dominating. Painful lack of contact might be, oh, I feel invisible, abandoned, neglected. There's no one here for me. And when a child feels wounded by a parent or both parents, they're going to respond in a couple different ways. They might actually internalize the parent that's more difficult and become like them. Or if there's another caretaker in the house, the child might look to that other parent and see how they deal with the difficult parent, What are their ways of coping with them? Do they just like dismiss, deny, have a drink, avoid the situation? Do they get loud? Do they scream? Do they throw plates against the wall? Do they leave the house and go for a drive in their car? As children, we're absorbing all this information around us, and we're looking for ways, we're looking for strategies to deal with life, to deal with the challenges that are present. So we can either become like that wounding parent, that difficult parent, the one who's like difficult for us, they hurt us, they just cause us stress. It almost feels like maybe they're never on our side, on our team. We can become like them. We can become like the opposite parent, the other caretaker, see how they deal with this difficult personality. And simultaneously, we can create our own response. We can create our own reaction. We can come up with something intelligent that just helps us deal with the circumstances. So an over-involved parent, want to give you a couple more words to describe, like, what is an over-involved parent? Well, they might show up as intrusive or invasive. So, you know, they might ask you questions and questions on end, ask you a lot of maybe personal questions. They might read your journal. They might always enter your room without knocking. They might put a hand on you in a way that you don't want, right? Like, this person is interacting with me in a way that I don't want, which could be a slap, right? It could be a pinch or a poke. It could be excessive hugging or kisses on the forehead or just something that's like, ah, that's annoying to me. I don't want that. Parent could be insensitive. They could be controlling, maybe invalidating. They don't really care what you think. That's the tendency of the over-involved parent. In some ways, you could think of part of this archetype as a helicopter parent. And on the flip side, we have an under-involved parent who is avoidant, neglectful. They're unavailable. And they could be unavailable because they're always working or they're always out doing things and they're never prioritizing time with you. It could be that they're home, but they're emotionally unavailable. They're not really present. They're not really engaged. They can be withdrawn and simply appear as uninterested. Now, when we've got these two characters, a child's defense is often to do the opposite. So if you've got a parent who is under-involved, you might have a tendency to maximize, right? If you had a parent who's over-involved, that controlling, dominating kind of energy, you might become a minimizer. So you start to learn to keep everything inside to yourself because you don't want it controlled. You don't want to be judged. You don't want to be told to do something different or to feel differently than you feel. And the maximizer, you know, they have to do their thing with the under-involved parent to try to get their attention. Oh, I got to get loud, or I got to cry, or I got to do something kind of like extreme, or I got to exaggerate my experience to try to get this person to be with me, to pay attention with me. So we got that painful contact, painful lack of contact. And as I said before, the child basically makes this decision based on their experience of their parents to constrict their energy or expand their energy. And the reason I'm talking about this is that, as I've said before, our childhood adaptations become our adult problems. The things that we had to do to survive as children, we use those strategies now on autopilot, unconsciously. Part of our brain thinks that they're going to work for us as adults. We know that they did a pretty good job for us in the past. And to a degree, that's kind of just like where we're at. That's the level of our development, the level of our skill set until we learn how to do things differently. And often to learn how to do things differently, we've got to have an experience in a romantic relationship where we talk about these things, where we practice noticing, bringing our awareness to the way that we're being willing to receive some feedback, you know, to listen to our partner's experience of us, allowing them to reflect back what they notice. And can we hold that feedback? Can we hear what they're seeing, what they're noticing, without totally taking it personally and doubling down into our minimizing, maximizing ways? Because the minimizer, for example, has a tendency to deflect, to avoid, to deny, to want to be seen as perfect. So if they have any sense that they're not good enough, they just go straight into that story, this old program, this thing that they learned as a kid or feared as a kid, that they just weren't enough in some way because the parent standards were too high. One parent or both parents always demanded excellence. So all of this matters because when we're stressed out, when we're in pain, when we're upset in our adult life, we are going to defend against that automatically by using one of these two strategies. And it doesn't mean that your partner needs to be causing you pain, stress. You could be stressed out about the bills. You could be upset about something at work. Your friend could have said something that pissed you off. And that can send you into this energetic expression. And ultimately, once you really notice this about yourself, you're going to see it more of as a way of being, more of your like default mode of expression. And there's opportunities to stretch. There's opportunities to grow in different directions. So this minimizer type, there's some specific growth opportunities for them. Instead of being the turtle in the shell, being sort of private, keeping everything to themselves, being super independent, being maybe locked up a little bit, being guarded or being defensive, what would happen, you know, instead of withdrawing, instead of shutting down, detaching when they're stressed or upset, is it possible for them to open up, just to come out of the shell a little bit, to be more present, to be more available to their partner? Can they take ownership of what they're feeling and what they're experiencing? Can they share more about what's going on inside of them? Because the pattern is for them to basically keep that to themselves because it wasn't safe to express that when they were younger. Can the minimizer ask for more of what they need? Because their tendency is to pretend like they're all good and they don't need anything. One of the deepest embodiments of this pattern is to say, I'm good. I have nothing to work on. This is your shit. And it's got nothing to do with me. I've done all the work I need to do. I'm complete, right? It's like wearing this mask, having this shield up to say, I'm totally enough. I'm good. Nothing to see here. Because to admit that maybe there is something to work on would hit this vulnerability for them, would plug right into this historical context of their childhood, which probably had a caretaker there, which didn't make them feel like they were good enough. The caretaker would have made them feel not good enough. There's one thing here I'll say, which is that if you are partnered with a minimizing partner, there's an art form here and a practice that you can consider, which is how could I help my partner in some moments come out of their shell a little bit? How could I invite them out from the back of their cave? How could I invite them out of their shell a little bit? How could I be that might relax them or inspire them to open up? And I'm not saying that you need to do all of the work here or that either person is like has to go first, but it's just a question. And we're going to do the same thing for the maximizer. So if you are with a minimizing partner, you see them in what I'm describing, it's like, how could you be in a way that allows them to come forward? These patterns are tricky. They're unconscious patterns. They're connected to our childhood development. They can be difficult to shift. So, you know, sometimes we need support, but sometimes we just need to hear it laid out in a relatively clear way to understand more about what's going on, to see ourselves inside of a pattern and say, whoa, that's totally me, or that's totally my partner. Huh. You know, how could we shift this? How could we improve our communication and the way that we are with each other? For the maximizer, you know, they're kind of like this storm cloud of energy. Harville and Helen from the Imago world, they call it the hailstorm. And it's really just this crying, pursuing, whining, clinging kind of energy. It doesn't mean that the person walks around in their adult life crying. They might be comfortable expressing their emotions of variety of kinds. They might be quick to cry during a sad movie, or express tears of sadness or joy, depending on what's going on in their life. They can also be a little bit more of the people pleaser. They can pursue, whine, cling. They're quick to complain about things and get negative and vocalize that with their partner. And it's because they're trying to attract attention. They're trying to draw attention towards the issue, draw attention towards the pain, because that's what they had to do as a kid with the neglectful caretaker, the unavailable caretaker who wasn't present, wasn't paying attention. So now their adult partner, who's a minimizer, can appear the same way, or they can fear that they appear the same way. So growth opportunities here for a maximizer. Well, a little bit of self-soothing, self-regulating. I think that those practices are actually important for both partners. But it's kind of this leaning back a bit, taking a step back, backing off more, containing more of your own experience as a maximizer, and seeing if you can work through things yourself, seeing if there are other resources available to you when you've got a question, instead of just automatically taking it to your partner. Managing more of your own emotions, which could be with your own resources, your own process. It could be reaching out to a friend or a colleague or someone else you feel safe with, and not putting so much energy onto your partner. And really developing more of a sense of self. And that's a key feature here, because the maximizer doesn't have as rigidly defined of a self as the minimizer does. The minimizer, they had to deeply, strongly develop themselves and become rigid because they had one caretaker who was dominating, smothering, forcing their opinions or ideas or values onto the child, and not giving the child space to make up their own mind. So the maximizer has a little bit of an opposite experience, which is that they weren't validated. They didn't feel seen. They didn't feel important or a priority as a child. And so there isn't this development and solidity to their self. This is the kind of person who might look at a big menu at a restaurant and be like, oh, like, I don't know what I want. Whereas the minimizer might say, yep, I know what I want. I'm having this. And they're waiting for their partner to decide what they should order. So this is a minimizing, maximizing pattern. Both of these people have key growth opportunities. They also both have strengths. There are superpowers that are part of both of these adapted selves, so to speak. And if you see yourself in these qualities, for example, the minimizer who's independent, focused on logic, working through things on their own, you can see how that's actually great for them, that they can self-source and they have these resources. They feel like they can work things through on their own. There's obviously a shadow side. There's many limitations to it. And the maximizer who says, we need to talk about this. This is an issue. We need to deal with this. This is a problem. You know, there's something valid in what they're saying, but what they're noticing, it's just how it's expressed that often determines how it's heard. How we say things determines so much about how it's going to process through our partner's ear into their brain, and how they're going to respond. So if all of that is a little bit complicated, just notice expanding, constricting, these pulsing expressions of energy that we've got between us. And if you've got complaints about your partner, frustrations about them, it's likely that they fit into, or you can see them inside of, this maximizing, minimizing way. One of the key points here is that you're almost always attracted to someone who has the opposite strategy to you. So the anxious person marries the avoidant. The artist is with the accountant. The one who pursues is with the one who withdraws. The one who exaggerates is with the one who withholds. And the one who clings on tight, they've got the hots for the one who detaches. And we can get this windshield wiper kind of dynamic back and forth, you know, in our relationship, push and pull. One person leans in, the other leans out. And that's why from relationship to relationship, or if you've been together long enough, you can even notice that your style shifts. That, whoa, you know, when we started, I was more anxious and now I'm way more avoidant. Or, you know, in my last relationship, I was a total maximizer, but now I find myself minimizing. Or maybe you see yourself in both strategies. And that makes sense. We are not fixed pieces of furniture. We're going to respond differently in different situations with different people. We are going to do what we've got to do. We're going to use the skills, the programs, the information we've got in our brain to cope with the situations at hand. But as our stress levels go up in life, by way of what's happening in the economy, with our health, in our bank account, with our family, or with our own partner, our stress levels go up and we have a greater tendency to minimize and maximize. We go deeper into these patterns as our stress and our upset increases, which can create more and more trouble for people. So some couples believe, and some therapists believe, that couples have communication issues. I believe that these are childhood trauma issues. You're never fighting about what you think you're fighting about. And there's always something from the past that's driving your reactivity now. So even though your partner is doing something that's annoying that you don't like, you have a valid need as an adult that you deserve to get met. It's also sensitive, and it's particularly important for you because there's something that happened back on that yellow brick road of development. There's something that went on there that disturbs your psyche, causes you trouble, triggers you. So you might more intensely minimize or maximize now to try to make sure that the same thing doesn't happen, that the same pattern doesn't repeat. There is an unconscious agenda that goes beyond attaining love. So when we look out into the world and we say, I want a partner to travel the world with, I want someone to build a family with, practice my faith, or, you know, I'm looking for a partner to have wild tantric sex with and just meet God through orgasm. Whatever your idea is about being in relationship, there's something outside of your awareness. There's something you're not thinking about. This is in the unconscious part of your psyche, which is that you want to grow, heal, and repair. Harville Hendricks wrote that our entire unconscious motivation for being in adult relationship is to heal and finalize unfinished business from the past. And in this case, the unfinished business is what went down on that yellow brick road of childhood, on that developmental mountain. What are the hurts? What are the concerns? What are the things that are unresolved from that experience? We want to heal and finalize that now. We all bring an unmet need from our early experience into our adult relationships. We expect our partner to meet that need, often without talking with them about it. And our partner does the same thing. And then we fight about not getting our needs met. It's a very common pattern. So couples need to understand this information. They need to understand maximizing and minimizing so that they can work through the power struggles that come up in their relationship. You know, we need to know this, but we also need to have this experience. So it's not enough for you to listen to this podcast and be like, oh, wow, okay, I get that. You actually need to have the experience of working through these moments with your partner to truly get that there's something deeper here driving the repetitive negativity, the misunderstanding, or the tension that goes on. And if we don't learn how to work through the power struggle, we leave the relationship, or we end up in kind of a coping dead zone where things just feel really flat. There's not a lot of chemistry, not a lot of dates or sex or aliveness in this phase. And many people that you know might be in relationships for 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and they're just in that coping dead zone. Hey, maybe they're doing the best that they can with the awareness level that they got. Most people I talk to now, my clients and the people in my community, they have higher expectations for their relationship. They don't want to repeat the patterns of the past. They don't want the kind of relationship that they saw with their parents or around them in the community or in society. They want something more. And so they make a commitment to transformation and growth and to try to take on this thing called conscious relationship, conscious adult love, to take responsibility for our pain, our hurt, our projections, our fears, instead of putting that all onto our partner. the relationship's about equality, about a shared vision, and creating a depth of connection over time, hanging in there with each other and understanding that, hey, we're not perfect. We got things to work on. We both have our flaws and our deficits. And how can we continue to ask each other that question? How can we love each other better? I hope that this presentation today was useful for you. If you have questions about this, you can always reach out to me. I appreciate all of you tuning into this show and telling me what resonates, what doesn't. It's great to hear from all of you. If you're listening and you have not left a 5-star review, I just want to ask you to please take a moment to do it. It's extremely helpful for me, not really painful for you. And it makes a big difference to connect this show and these episodes to other people who are looking for information on how to transform their relationships. And I think that's a great thing. So thanks for being here. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.